The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, if my count is right, today is my 300th program. I believe we have 338 programs posted on the website because of all of the wonderful substitutes that have filled in for me over the past year and a half. And many of you have besides praising the program itself, have really commented some here recently on those substitutes that have provided so much support for the program and that help behind the scenes even when it's my day on the air. This one here from the Southeast U.S., it says, I sure appreciate all of your programs every day. The other men who fill in from time to time are also doing a fantastic job. I love to see the fruits being produced in those young men from God's college. Lots of fruits indeed. And these other men, as I say, are doing a wonderful job, not only when they fill in, but in helping really produce the program when I'm here, helping me to compile the content and to pull together the sound bites and, of course, to produce the shows, to edit the shows, to post the shows. A lot that goes into it. But it is amazing when you're going at it day in and day out, just how fast these programs pile up when we take this opportunity every day to get together with you every afternoon or every evening or every morning, depending upon when you listen. So thanks for those comments, and keep them coming in over the next few days. Well, in the last few months, I've gotten a fair bit of mileage out of Ronald Reagan's presidency, and it's great that that happened during the 1980s, with technology being far enough along back then to where we have so many wonderful sound bites available to us today, which of course works great for radio. Well, Ronald Reagan really did love America's traditions. He loved its Judeo-Christian roots. He loved all things revolving around the office of the president. He loved hearing the Marine band. He loved saluting the U.S. servicemen. And he really loved everything about the White House and what it represented, what it symbolized. Michael Deaver, one of Ronald Reagan's assistants while he was president, he was once in the Oval Office with him, and he saw the president working away all hot and bothered because of how hot it was on this particular afternoon. And Mr. Deaver saw the president perspiring while he was working there in the Oval Office, and he said, well, why don't you take off your coat? It's so hot in here. And Mr. Reagan said, oh, no. He said, oh, no, I could never take my coat off in this office. He had a tremendous amount of respect for the office of president, for America and all of its institutions, as I said, but in particular for this office, so much so that he wouldn't even take off his suit coat there in the Oval Office when he was working. He set a very high standard when he occupied that office, and he considered it a great honor serving in that capacity. He brought this out in his farewell address back in 1989, this first clip that I'll play for you. It comes from that farewell address, and in this he talks about the 8 years of service as president. Clip one.
It's been the honor of my life to be your president. So many of you have written the past few weeks to say thanks, but I could say as much to you. Nancy and I are grateful for the opportunity you gave us to serve.
They had an opportunity to serve, and this was the honor of his life. in the Encyclopedia Britannica on the article for the White House. It says, during the 19th century, the White House became a symbol of American democracy. In the minds of most Americans, the building was not a palace from which the president ruled, but merely a temporary office and residence from which he served the people he governed. The White House belonged to the people, not the president. And the president occupied it only for as long as the people allowed him to stay. And Mr. Reagan stayed there for 8 years. And he considered it the great honor of his life, serving as America's president. Notice what he went on to say in that same farewell address, clip two.
People ask how I feel about leaving, and the fact is, parting is such sweet sorrow. The sweet part is California and the ranch and freedom. The sorrow, the goodbyes, of course, and leaving this beautiful place. You know, down the hall and up the stairs from this office is the part of the White House where the president and his family live. There are a few favorite windows I have up there that I like to stand and look out of early in the morning. The view is over the grounds here to the Washington Monument and then the Mall and the Jefferson Memorial. But on mornings when the humidity is low, you can see past the Jefferson to the river, the Potomac, and the Virginia shore. Someone said that's the view Lincoln had when he saw the smoke rising from the Battle of Bull Run. But I see more prosaic things. The grass on the banks, the morning traffic as people make their way to work, now and then a sailboat on the river. I've been thinking a bit at that window. I've been reflecting on what the past 8 years have meant and mean. And the image that comes to mind like a refrain is a nautical one. A small story about a big ship and a refugee and a sailor.
That's President Ronald Reagan reflecting on his time in the White House. And in this particular instance, thinking back on a story, a nautical one, as he said there, about a big ship and a refugee and a sailor. He was talking about something that happened in the early 1980s on the carrier Midway when it was there patrolling the South China Sea. And there was some refugees crammed into a boat that these American sailors then went out to rescue, brought them aboard the carrier. And there was one American serviceman who was just working away on the deck. And when these refugees came aboard, one of the refugees, when he passed this particular guy hard at work, this Navy seaman, this refugee yelled to him, "Hello, American! Hello, American sailor! Hello, freedom man!" That's the story that Mr. Reagan told in that farewell address. He, as I say, was so proud of America's heritage, of what America stood for in the world, the fact that it stood for freedom and liberty, as this refugee brought out with one of the first things he said when he got aboard the carrier Midway. Mr. Reagan really did revere the office of president. It was the honor of his life to serve as president. And as I said a moment ago, he viewed the White House, particularly the Oval Office, almost as if it was sacred ground. What a structure. I mean, America doesn't go back as far as so many of the nations here in Europe. And so in some ways, the White House is not that old, but as far as America is concerned, it's one of the oldest. For more than two centuries, that home, the White House, has stood as a symbol of the American presidency, as a symbol of America's government. And America's government, as Lincoln said, it's a government of the people, by the people, for the people. And so the White House is a symbol in many ways. A symbol of the American people. It's even been called the People's House. John Adams, He was the first president to live in the White House. Construction on the home finished just shortly before Adams left office. And so he was there for a short time before President Jefferson came in. But in November of 1800, on his second night inside this new mansion that still needed to be filled out with furniture and decorated and such, but on his second night in the White House, Adams wrote a letter to his wife. And he said, "I pray heaven to bestow the best of blessings on this house and all that shall hereafter inhabit it. May none but the wise men ever rule under this roof. I pray heaven, I pray that God would bestow the best blessings on this house and all that shall inhabit it hereafter." Well, that particular prayer, that's a quote that President Franklin Roosevelt, many years later, had inscribed in gold to hang over the fireplace in the state dining room there at the White House. This is what it says at the website scholastic.com, again, on the article about the White House. It says, "The White House has a unique and fascinating history. Presidents can express their individual style in how they decorate the house and how they receive the public during their stay. Thomas Jefferson held the first inaugural open house in 1805. Many of those who attended the swearing-in ceremony at the U.S. Capitol simply followed him home, where he greeted them in the Blue Room. President Jefferson also opened the house for public tours, and it's remained open, except during wartime, ever since." That was in Jefferson's day, during the days of Abraham Lincoln. The White House had a virtual open-door policy, so much so that it really did take up a large portion of President Lincoln's daily activities. His aides even tried to shield him from the flood of visitors. But Lincoln refused this, at least at first. I think maybe later in his presidency they had to curtail it somewhat. But Lincoln said this early on, For myself, I feel, though the tax of my time is heavy, that no hours of my day are better employed than those which thus bring me again within the direct contact and atmosphere of the average of our whole people." It was the people's house. Now, given this history, one can only imagine what these towering figures of American history would think about what goes on inside the people's house today.
I am Victor Raymond. I am a member of the Rosebud Sioux tribe. And I stand here with you today as an out bisexual two-spirit man. Today, we are here at the White House, and I call upon the ancestors to witness our presence and for the great spirit, Wangkatanka, to guide our words and thoughts so that we can speak true and strong.
That's what goes on in the White House today. And so we've gone from the prayer of John Adams that God would bestow the best of blessings on this house and those who would live here to this.
And I call upon the ancestors to witness our presence and for the great spirit, Wangkatanka, to guide our words and thoughts so that we can speak true and strong.
This all happened at the bisexual community briefing about 2 weeks ago, September 26th. You had a bisexual two-spirit person. I had to look that up. I think it means you identify as a male and female spirit. And there he was, praying to the Native American deity. How do you say it? Wakantanka. Inside the White House. All of this as part of Bisexual Awareness Week. The White House wanted to do its part to raise awareness to all of the struggles facing the LGBT, and now you add the Q community, and you need the Q. You need the Q, because we're no longer talking about just the rights for lesbians, gays, bisexuals, and transgenders. There's many other groups that we need to raise awareness for.
So we in the bi community, we're really awesome, right? We celebrate and we embrace all types of people, all walks of life, and all identities. Anywhere from pansexual to omnisexual to two-spirited to queer, fluid, gender nonconforming, and even no labels.
You know it's bad when you don't even know what half of these labels mean. This is who the White House now welcomes. It's as if all of these groups now can move right through the revolving door of the White House. When I heard about this briefing on radio last week, and I'm surprised now looking back that it wasn't given more coverage. I heard it on one radio show several days ago, and that's about it. And I ran a Google search on it the other day, and I didn't see much coverage at all. Because it's just happening with such great frequency now, and we've just come to accept it. But in going through the material for this show and just hearing some of those sound bites, it made me think of this prophecy in Ezekiel 8. I was talking to my wife about it the other day. In Ezekiel 8, the prophet, he begins this particular vision by describing the great Creator God. And then he moves from that into this graphic description of the sins of the people of Israel. It says in Ezekiel 8 and verse 3, "And he put forth the form of a hand, and took me by the lock of my head, and the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven, and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem, to the door of the inner gate that looked toward the north, and there was the seat of the image of jealousy, which provokes to jealousy." And so God brought Ezekiel in vision to Jerusalem, where he saw this image or this idol right in the temple of God, right in God's house. He calls it an image of jealousy. It looks like God. A lot of people see it as God. It's in the place of God. Sonsino commentary says of that last phrase, the image of jealousy, it refers to it as the image of outraged, evil authority, referring to the devil, the god of this world. 2 Corinthians 4:4, Sonsino goes on to say, which provokes God to vindicate his exclusive rights. It's right there at the entry of God's house. And no wonder God is so upset. You can study on your own time 2 Corinthians 11 and verse 14, where Satan is there described as an angel of light. An angel of light. It's a great counterfeit. The religious systems of the devil, and people see it as the religion of God. And today, any old religion is allowed right inside the White House. Any old pagan idol or God is brought right into it, and we think nothing of it, and it's hardly reported on. What would John Adams or Thomas Jefferson or Abraham Lincoln or even Franklin Roosevelt or Ronald Reagan, what would they think of this briefing that happened just 2 weeks ago inside the White House Verse 6, it says, He said furthermore unto me, Son of man, see you what they do? Do you see what they do? Even the great abominations that the house of Israel commits here? That I should go far off from my sanctuary? But turn you yet again, and you shall see greater abominations. I mean, there was so much evil there to begin with that it simply drove God out of the house. It drove God out of the temple. And God said to his prophet, you go and peer in there again and see, even greater abominations are going on. Verse 7, and he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. And then said he unto me, Son of man, dig now in the wall. And when I had digged in the wall, behold, a door. So God told Ezekiel here to look inside the house, to look through this hole in the wall, and to see for himself all of these abominable practices. It's even worse. It's even worse. What's going on in there, God said, it's even worse than what it might first seem to be. And that's the way it is with evil. I mean, once it establishes a foothold, it spreads like cancer. That's what Paul said in 2 Timothy 3:13, that evil men and seducers would just wax worse and worse and worse. And we're at the point now. We really and truly are at the point now where the natural man has to wonder, what else could it be? I mean, how much worse can it get? Truthfully, how much worse can it get? What's next? Who's invited in next? What sort of abominable practices are going to be put on display next? Verse 9 says, and he said to me, go in and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts, and all the idols of the house of Israel, portrayed upon the wall, round about, creeping demons, abominable beasts, some really sick stuff going on, in other words. Now my father brings out in his booklet on the prophet Ezekiel's book here, that all this grotesque, perverse behavior, it was going on inside of God's church in these latter days. But look at what's happening also in the nations of Israel, the modern day Israelites, Ephraim and Manasseh. Think about this recent White House briefing in relation to what my father's written in America Under Attack. He said that when Satan was cast down, that he immediately went after spiritual Israel. We know this. We've seen the destruction. We've seen the abomination of desolation, spiritually speaking. But as my father brings out in the booklet, Satan didn't stop there. After going after spiritual Israel, then he directed his attack to physical Israel, primarily the United States and Britain, and little Judah as well. Satan's big goal, he brings out in his booklet, America Under Attack, his big goal is to bring down Israel, spiritual Israel and physical Israel. Notice this quote. It's from America Under Attack. It says, if you look at the whole story in biblical prophecy, you see that Satan has a three-pronged attack. First, he attacks God's church. Second, he tears down the values within the nations of Israel. That's what's happening here. We're under attack. Satan's tearing down the values within the nations of Israel. My father says, continuing on with this third prong, he says, finally, he'll bring the Holy Roman Empire to destroy those nations in the Great Tribulation. This is Satan's master plan for destroying spiritual and physical Israel. He says here, we're watching that second phase unfold before our eyes, even as the Holy Roman Empire becomes a world superpower. We're watching it happen right before our eyes. Satan and his demons have been cast down to this earth. It says that in Revelation 12 and verse 9. They've been cast down to this earth. They're confined to this earth. And we see their fingerprints everywhere you look. And as my father brings out in that booklet, I mean, how do you explain? How do you explain what's going on in the world today without this knowledge of what happened in 1986? Well, as he brings out in the booklet, the devil and then millions and millions of demons, they're confined to this earth. And they can't any longer go out into the universe. And so what are they doing? What are these beings who have awesome power? What are they doing? Paul said in Ephesians 6 that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against what? Against spirits and principalities and powers in the spiritual realm. That's what we're battling against. And as I say, you see their influence everywhere that you look. Revelation 9, or rather 12 and verse 12 says, "Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and you that dwell in them. Woe to the inhabitants of the earth and of the sea, for the devil has come down unto you having great wrath, because he knows that he has but a short time." You see, they've been kicked out of heaven. That's why there's rejoicing in heaven. But God says, "Woe unto the earth," and even the sea is so bad, it just encompasses everything on this earth. So much darkness, so much evil, so much perversion. I mean, Satan's been the god of this world from the beginning of human civilization. But now he's cast down along with his demons, and he's full of wrath. And he knows that his time is so short. My father writes in America Under Attack, that army of demons is still around. They wrecked the church. And then they moved on to other areas. Now they seek to bring down nations. And notice what he says here. The highest office in the world's number one superpower, which happens to be a descendant of ancient Israel, would have to be a big target for Satan. That's the biggest target of all in the nations of Israel today. The highest office in the world's number one superpower. It's happened anciently. Satan getting a hold of kings in Israel, in Judah. It says further in the booklet that I do know about the devil. This is my father writing, and I know he's doing everything he can to sink America. And I've seen him use a man at the top, an Antiochus, to bring down an entire organization. And I'm watching as this government takes one step after another that is weakening this country and hastening the fulfillment of some of the most terrifying prophecies in the Bible. That's what we're witnessing. That's what we're watching here. We're watching this second phase unfold before our eyes. We're watching Satan tear down the values within the nations of Israel. And when we come back, we'll look at how that those sins, well, they're putting them out there on display for everyone to see. And it's receiving widespread acceptance. People just go along. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Don't forget to email us this week, td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, and even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Bag Lady Manifesto. Hashtag say her name. Hashtag black trans lives matter.
More lowlights there from the bisexual community briefing at the White House on September 26th. I think that was the name of her poem. She's a black trans oral historian and poet. And the White House invited her to the bisexual community briefing 2 weeks ago, so that she could share some of her prose with the world.
A deepened understanding of race and culture requires the following, and then some. Truth-telling for immortality, a recognition of historical trauma, an honest assessment of capitalism and its inherent violence.
Now, we've talked before about some of the people that are being invited in to the White House with great frequency. Some hardened criminals, some artists and singers that are sending the kinds of messages that want to bring down law enforcement or the entire system. These are the kinds of people who want to bring down the system. It's all rigged the way they see it. The founders were racist. Capitalism is inherently violent.
Don't wall me in, Pilate said to the updated finger. They could perform all that jazz. Carmen said, burning black arts is a sin. We do what we do. We do what they don't know. We know what they don't know. Blocks of art, talks art, walks art, dances on needles, all scratchy like a 78 wax recording of Bessie Smith. Lions sleeping, dread locked hair with gray streaks of wisdom, quickened with the blues. Ah, yes, the blues. Am I blue? Hand over one eye, the good one, so I can see you one more time. Reflection, black bodies linking all oppressions, annihilating psychosocial development with lead-based drinking water.
This is the kind of nonsense that is given a platform inside the People's House, inside the White House, the symbol for America's government, the symbol for the American experiment. Well, then following Victor's lead, that first individual we heard in the first segment, the two-spirit man, this particular man dressed as a woman, then breaks into some kind of a religious chant.
Let us moan so the devil don't know what we talking about. Our existence is experiment, is created, is perpetuated, is sustained by individuals, but no less a system.
Well, the devil knows what they're talking about. He's behind it all. He is the god of this world. He's the author of this kind of nonsense. It makes you wonder what the current administration in the White House would do if someone requested a briefing that included the oral reading of Deuteronomy 22 and verse 5, or maybe other verses like that. In that particular verse, Moses said, the woman shall not wear that which pertains unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment. For all that do so are an abomination unto the Eternal your God. That's what God's truth says. That's the truth of God. Now you look at the world today, even what's going on inside the White House, and look at how much testimony we have to the confusion and the bizarre behavior that follows after a full-on rejection of God's laws. Look at how evil is proliferating in our society today because people are ignoring these basics of God's truth. Switching back to that two-spirit man, notice what he said in his presentation. This is clip number 10.
Now we are faced with new times when bisexual people, two-spirit people, others that we now know as LGBTQ, are not recognized and our place in the community questioned. But bi and trans people, and particularly now amongst many tribes and communities, bisexual, transgender, Native women in particular, face challenge and discrimination. We stand with them and with all people whose place is no longer recognized.
Right, there's so much discrimination aimed at these people that they're able to celebrate their perverse lifestyles inside the White House during Bisexual Awareness Week. It was a big crowd with celebrations, with music and dance, and then these speeches and these oral readings of all of that nonsense you heard earlier. And they're lamenting how much they're being discriminated inside the White House. They're carrying on with this. And all across the country, as we've been reading now in the recent months, they're able to go into one organization after another and decide which bathroom they'll enter into. They decide. Every man does what seems right in his own eyes. And the world's just supposed to welcome them all in with open arms. Never mind what God says. Never mind what the truth of the Bible is. Look at what it says in the New Testament. You think it's just Old Testament teaching? In Romans 1, verse 21, Paul says, because that when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were they thankful, but they became vain in their imaginations, and their foolish heart was darkened. God says this world just became futile or empty in its thinking. All the while, so proud of its accomplishments, quote unquote, its perversities. This whole passage here, it reveals how essential God's knowledge is to true education, to being properly trained and educated the right way. There was none of that in this briefing. God's knowledge, clearly, it's been rejected. His laws ridiculed. God says in verse 22, this is Paul writing, Romans 1, verse 22, professing themselves to be wise, they became fools. Professing wisdom, and what is it? Just rank foolishness. Just bizarre nonsense. Incomprehensible. They became fools, changed the glory of the uncorruptible God into an image made like to corruptible man, and to birds, and four-footed beasts, and creeping things. Very similar language to what's found there in Ezekiel 8, to what the prophet Ezekiel saw going on in God's house, going on at headquarters, going on at the capital city. Instead of worshiping the true God, well, we've erected all kinds of idols. Worshiping anything in this material creation except God. Worshiping in so many ways. Self. Vanity. Lust. And on it goes. Verse 24, wherefore God, notice this, God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lusts of their own hearts, to dishonor their bodies between themselves. That's what it's come to. Dishonoring our bodies between ourselves. Every man just doing his own thing. And the world tolerates it and accepts it or turns a blind eye to it. And God says, well, it's leading to this immoral cesspool. Evil like we've never seen it. Just like Sodom and Gomorrah. Jesus said that in the Gospels. The other thing this passage brings out here is that God, clearly, he's not trying to change or save the vast majority of people on earth today. A lot of people in the world of Christianity assume that. But here, I mean, clearly, God he's letting these people see where their own ways lead. He's letting them experience the fruits of the way which seems right to man. There's a way that seems right, the proverb says. But the end thereof are the ways of death. And so God's given man up to these disobedient pulls of the flesh. He's not now trying to save or to change this world. When he does, I mean, you can be sure there's going to be some real power and force coming from his government administration to keep the way of the tree of life. Verse 25, it says, who changed the truth of God into a lie and worshipped and served the creation more than the Creator, who is blessed forever. Amen. For this cause, verse 26, Romans 1:26, for this cause God gave them up unto vile affections, for even their women did change the natural use into that which is against nature. Paul said even their women did this. I mean, I can't imagine anything worse, he must have been thinking. For the most beautiful thing in God's material creation to do this? To change the natural use into that which goes against nature? You mean they got into this kind of sexual depravity? Lesbianism and the like? Verse 27, and likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust, one toward another, men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of their error, which was meat, burned in their lust one toward another. Let me read to you what it says in Barnes' commentary. This is just a, I guess, a garden variety commentary that you could pull off the shelf at a library. Barnes here says, the sin which is here specified is what was the shameful sin of Sodom, and which from that has been called sodomy. It would scarcely be credible that man had been guilty of a crime so base and so degrading unless there was ample and full testimony to it. Perhaps there is no sin which is so deep, which so deeply shows the depravity of man as this. None which would so much induce one to hang his head and blush to think himself a man. Well, that's Barnes. That's a commentary that goes back a few years, obviously. Look at, though, where we are today. Not too many people hanging their heads, for sure. We declare our sin as Sodom, Isaiah 3:9, I think it is. We declare it. It's on full display. It's celebrated. It's celebrated. Even at the highest levels of government in Israel. Verse 28, it says here, and even as they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, God gave them over to a reprobate mind to do those things that are not convenient. God gave them over. God's letting man experience the fruits of the way which seems right. He's letting man learn through the school of hard knocks, you could say, exactly where those ways, apart from God's ways, exactly where those ways are leading. Well, and then he lists them all off, similar to 1 Corinthians 6. Verse 29 says here, Romans 1, being filled with all unrighteousness, fornication, wickedness, covetousness, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, debate, deceit, malignity, whisperers, backbiters, haters of God, despiteful, proud, boasters, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, implacable, unmerciful. And then it concludes here, verse 32 in the Revised Standard says, though they know God's decree that those who do such things deserve to die, they not only do them, but they approve those who practice them. They know God's decree. They know God's position. They know what God says about it. And yet they hang their heads high. Well, there's no hanging of those heads, is there? They're proud, and the vast majority just approve of those who practice them. See, those who consent to the evil, they're just as guilty as the ones committing the acts. That's what Paul's saying here. That's why it says back in the Old Testament, don't follow a multitude to do evil. Don't participate it, don't in it or consent to do it or consent to it. You look at, though, at the world today, there may be a minority of people who would condemn these perverse lifestyles put on display in the people's house. But so many of the typical conservatives, the so-called conservatives today, their opinions on this and other things like it, it's just indifference. As long as it doesn't affect me. Look at the current election cycle. We talked about it yesterday on the program. As long as it doesn't affect me, well, let them do what they want. And, well, if one guy's got a lot of problems or has made a lot of mistakes, so is the other guy. So it's just a battle of who hasn't committed as many sins. Where does this stop? I mean, how does this end? You look into the Bible, obviously, I could go through scripture after scripture of what God says about sex, about the creation of man and woman, male and female. Not some kind of gender spectrum of 18 to 20 different varieties. God says, I made them male and female from the very beginning, and all through the Bible, God strongly differentiates between the two. And he lays out details of what he expects for men and what he expects for women. And yet, look at the world today, especially in the United States. As in the days of Sodom and Gomorrah, where does this stop? Well, thankfully, we know how it's going to end with God's supernatural intervention. We can thank God for that. Isaiah 59:20 says, "The Redeemer shall come to Zion, and unto them that turn from transgression in Jacob, says the Eternal." You see, God is coming back to this earth. Jesus Christ is going to return to them that turned from transgression. To them that turn from sin. Herbert Armstrong wrote in his booklet, The World Tomorrow, he said the only hope for justice, of peace, of truth, of right solutions to all this world's problems, the only hope for right solutions is the coming in power and glory of Christ to set up world government. Right government. The government of God. Isaiah goes on and says in the very next chapter, Isaiah 60 and verse 1, "Arise and shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Eternal is risen upon you." When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few more emails that we didn't have time to get to yesterday. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
For an easy-to-read, information-rich news brief, join the growing readership of the Trumpet Weekly. Now you can enjoy all the top news stories from the previous week, condensed into a report combining the commentary, analysis, and reporting you've come to expect from thetrumpet.com, sent directly to your email. Subscribing is completely free. Simply visit the Trumpet Weekly section of thetrumpet.com to subscribe by email today.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
A few emails here from you dear listeners. This one from Mississippi says, "I really enjoy the program every weekday. I'm usually able to get an entire show in on my round-trip commute to work, listening to Monday's show on the conservative media, scoring Mr. Trump's last debate. I kept thinking of these four words that I believe most of the country's opinion of the U.S. is the opinion of the U.S. Certainly the politicians and most American media," he writes, "they believe the U.S. is simply too big to fail. Of course, there are no nannies standing in line to take care of her when she does finally fall." That's in response to yesterday's show. This one here from South Africa says, "At every chance I listen, often in the car, many times at home, or even in the office before work begins, I'm very grateful, too, for the links, or should I say references, to Mr. Herbert Armstrong. The clips are wonderful, also those of Ronald Reagan and others. While I cannot recall how I found you, I'm truly blessed to read, study, and listen, as well as watch and inspect websites such as thetrumpet.com, its German counterpart," I'm also German, she writes, "as well as pcog.org. All of this for the last probably 5 or so months. At the moment, I'm a coworker, and I've submitted my first test for the Bible correspondence course." She goes on to ask about the dig and Hebrew classes, or what we'd recommend along those lines, and how that she'd like to visit the Ophel in Jerusalem, and perhaps even Edstone and Edmond. But for the time being, It concludes, please know that your websites, newsletters, magazines, literature, various radio and TV programs are super hugely appreciated. That comes from South Africa. A few here in response to the program last week on the power of God's Holy Spirit. One writes, "This is a powerful study. I just want you to know that I'm keeping this close at hand to listen over and over." Another one here from Missouri. It says, "Hearing this awesome presentation on the Holy Spirit is so incredible. I had to listen twice, really, to take in the meat of this very important message." It says, "Thanks for your clarification of our need for the Spirit of God to make it through these end-time trials and tests. I'm so thankful to have the privilege of supporting God's work." And then one final one here, also in response to the Holy Spirit program. It says, "Though many can see the deceit in this world and see the need to change, and many want peace and are afraid of death, it seems most do not want to change, even if it means death. For warlike man, the power of God and the peace it brings may even be offensive. And there's nothing that the devil hates more than God's Spirit, even though all creation, including the spirit beings, were created by this power of God, existing before all things, and therefore more real than all things." Well, that brings us to the end of yet another program. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like for me to read your comments, send them to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.